Welcome into You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. Thank you for joining us today. I'm super excited to have a special guest on the phone, Mr. Jeffrey Smith, who is the Executive Director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, also author of two books, Genetic Roulette, Seeds of Deception, also made into a movie, Genetic Roulette was, latest movie. What was that, Jeffrey, you just told me?
Well, Secret Ingredients came out in the fall.
Okay.
It's making a lot of waves right now.
Awesome. Well, I encourage everyone to watch that movie, get the books. The website's responsibletechnology.org. I'm so excited to have Jeffrey with us today because I still, after it's actually 7 years now into this new kind of integrative practice that we transitioned into, and we've been doing this radio show for a long time, but I'll still have folks come up to me and say, you know, I'm not sure about this whole GMO, genetically modified stuff, and I just don't know that it's that bad or that there's evidence, or, I mean, still, even though we've talked ad nauseum. So I thought, let's just go to the, what I consider probably the world's leading expert that has really combed through the research. And it's tricky because research, I mean, everyone's biased, number one. So you can tweak research and manipulate research, and we'll talk about some of that today. You can make statistics look however you want them to look almost. And when there's money involved and human beings involved, you've got to be careful because human beings are biased and money drives us to do stuff that and cut some corners and maybe not present the full truth. So anyways, I consider Jeffrey Smith to be probably the leader in the GMO world as far as education and taking action on getting the truth about GMOs out there. So we invited him to come to the show, and he graciously said yes. So Jeffrey, let's just dive right in. Of course, we can go any direction you want. But I think just starting with that very question I get all the time, are GMOs really that bad? What's the big deal? Aren't we feeding the world? You know, that kind of mantra. So what say you to someone who asks you that, which I know you get that question all the time, I bet.
Well, let's hold off on the fake spin about feeding the world for a little bit, for a little later in the show, because that's clearly spin. It's not true. But where I want to dive in here is what could possibly go wrong to our health by eating GMO crops. Now, I was speaking about the documented health risks around the world for back in the early 2000s. 25 countries at that point. And during that time, people would come up to me and say that they could even feel the difference between using GMOs and non-GMOs, and I didn't believe them. I thought, even though I was describing studies in which rats got damage to virtually every organ and system within just 10 days on a supposedly safe GMO, and I was talking about the immune system responses and the slower growth rate and all this stuff, for some reason I did not expect or anticipate individuals to have such clear results. I figured it would just be some kind of slight increase in a number of diseases when you look at it after the fact with, you know, charts and graphs. But then I started presenting the evidence of the health dangers to the medical profession in 2006. And every year I'd go back to different conferences and give the relationship between GMOs and inflammation or cancer or allergies or immune system problems, and there was plenty of evidence. And what I did not realize is that the doctors were not only prescribing non-GMO and often organic diets to their patients, but they were starting to see predictable and dramatic recoveries. So in 2009, when I attended one of the conferences that I had attended 3 years earlier and given the lowdown on the dangers, I brought a video camera to interview the doctors and find out what they believed. And that was a shock. They were telling me that in their patients, they could see how GMOs caused inflammation, how it caused people who had allergies to have more allergies or more severe allergies, and basically to get better from a whole variety of issues. And I even said to someone, can I go to your clinic and ask your clients directly? And I did, and sure enough, there was a dramatic and predictable change. This one particular doctor could tell me how many days before mood and anxiety, behavior and anxiety, things like that would change. How many days would take for allergies? How many weeks or months it would take for digestive ailments? And it was amazing to me. And then I started interviewing farmers who got pigs and cows on non-GMO, and they were describing the same symptoms as going away when they put their livestock on non-GMO. So starting in 2012, when I released my previous film, Genetic Roulette, I started asking audiences, what did you notice when you switched to non-GMO or organic diets? And there was a large number of diseases and disorders that were repeated over and over again, and ultimately about 150 different lectures. And the number one improvement was always digestive disorders. The number two was always increased energy and reduced brain fog. And then there was other things, from weight problems to diabetes to autistic symptoms to cancer and liver disease. I mean, it was just amazing, but it was predictable. So then we put out a survey to 3,256 people who described getting better from 28 different conditions, and they were the same conditions described in the 150 lectures in the same relative frequency, with 85% talking about improvements in digestion, and the next one was increased fatigue, and the next one was reduced weight, and the next one was reduced brain fog, and diabetes was in there, and even gluten sensitivity. And so now my latest film, what I did with Amy Hart, has actual individuals who describe, and you can see the changes in them, getting better and completely recovering from many of these diseases when they switch to organic food. So I can talk about the peer-reviewed published animal feeding studies. I can talk about more than 30 diseases that are rising in parallel with the increased use of GMOs or the Roundup herbicide sprayed on them. And I can talk about the changes in pets and in livestock. But what I think is most compelling is that we have changes in thousands of individuals supported by the experience of thousands of practitioners who see the changes in their patients and clients. And if you look at what specifically they're doing to a genetically engineered crop, and you note exactly what the modes of action of those changes are, it would predict these problems in health.
Wow. So that really resonates when you see a patient get better. That's what we all got into. I think most of us get into the healthcare field for. You want patients to get better.
Absolutely.
And so when you can see that direct correlation, which, by the way, I like to always remind listeners, I got about 2 hours of nutrition education in 4 years of medical school at UT Houston. And that's not just down at UT Houston. That's pretty par for the course across the board. Doctors don't know much about nutrition, much less GMO and glyphosate, the main ingredient in Roundup. And which leads us to our next question. There's some folks, I think, still don't fully comprehend or understand. I mean, they hear those letters GMO, but maybe they don't fully know what exactly is that. So could you kind of give maybe a layman's term for people that are new to this game or don't fully even comprehend what we're talking about, GMO?
Well, most people are aware that the organisms, humans and animals and algae and fungi and bacteria, have DNA, and that the DNA get passed on to offspring through natural sexual reproduction. With genetic engineering, instead, you bypass that process, and you go in and you alter the genes artificially. You force genes from one species, like bacteria or viruses, into the DNA of other species, like soybeans or corn, or you go in with gene editing tools and rearrange the order of the genes or the order of the base pairs within the DNA, or you cut out little snippets, or you add little things and repeat them. So all of these things fall under the term genetic engineering. GMO means genetically modified organism, something that's created from the process of genetic engineering. Now, there's about 11 GM crops on the market, and six of them, the main ones, soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa, they are all engineered specifically to allow herbicides to be sprayed on the crops, and the herbicide would normally kill the crop, but the genetically engineered version survives. And so the most popular is Roundup Ready crops sprayed with Roundup herbicide. Monsanto produces the herbicide, they produce the seeds. By the way, Monsanto was purchased by Bayer, the aspirin maker, so now the name Monsanto is a history, it's more Bayer, but they have the same products out there, Roundup Ready crops, And then you end up with problems because of the process of genetic engineering, which cause massive collateral damage in the DNA and can result in allergens, toxins, carcinogens, anti-nutrients, and other problems. And then you also have a compounded problem where you have the Roundup sprayed on the crop. It gets absorbed into the crop. You can't wash it off. And then you eat high residues of the main poison in Roundup called glyphosate, which has a whole long list of issues why we really shouldn't be having that in our diet.
Right. So two potential ways that this can damage you: the actual DNA that's been altered and changed, and then the chemical that's sprayed on the plant, that can damage you too. Do you know, does the literature show very clearly, or do you have a hunch on which one of those is causing more damage? Are they both equally bad, that the actual genetic change? What's that? How's that affecting us versus is it just the Roundup that's hurting us?
Well, unfortunately, there's not a ton of research or not a ton of good research on GMOs, and that's because the FDA, in its wisdom, said, we don't need any safety studies on GMOs. The companies themselves can determine if it's safe. We found out later that the person in charge of that FDA policy was Michael Taylor, formerly Monsanto's attorney. And the FDA was instructed to promote GMOs, and so they created a position specifically for Michael Taylor where he created the GMO policy, and then he became Monsanto's vice president after that, and then went back into the FDA under the Obama administration as the U.S. food czar. So there we have the revolving door dictating a non-scientific and very dangerous policy. So we don't have a ton of research, but the research that we have shows consistent indications of serious harm by the genetic engineering process. Now, one of the most comprehensive research studies done on GMOs was done by a professor, Seralini, and his team in France. And Seralini is a toxicologist, and he was on the committee that evaluated the submissions by Monsanto and others for the French government, and he also did it for Europe as a whole. And he looked at Monsanto's corn varieties and said, oh my God, there's signs of toxicity in the rats that were fed the GMOs that are being completely ignored. They're being covered up. And so he quietly took the same protocol that Monsanto used with the same type of rats, the same number of rats, and extended the research on his own at a cost of several million dollars for 2 years, the lifespan of a rat. And he found that the rats that were eating the Roundup-ready corn that had been sprayed with Roundup had multiple massive tumors, premature death, and organ damage. But he did something else. He also took another group of rats and fed them the Roundup-ready corn that had never been sprayed with Roundup. That's not how it's grown, because you always grow it in conjunction with the spray, otherwise you wouldn't pay extra for the seeds. But he had someone grow out the seeds and never spray it and fed it to rats to see whether the corn itself was the culprit. And sure enough, the rats had multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage. But he also fed other groups of rats different levels of Roundup in their drinking water, but did not feed them the genetically engineered corn. And they, too, had multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage. So it was both the corn and the Roundup alone or together that caused these particular problems. Now, it's hard to know in detail which one is always worse than the other. We know that Roundup is always worse than just the main poison glyphosate. It can be 125 times more toxic than its so-called active ingredient, yet no research is done and required by our government on the Roundup formulation. They only ask Monsanto and other companies to submit data on just the glyphosate, and even then it's done on a form of glyphosate that's not even used in the formula, one that's actually safer. So there's no real research being evaluated by the EPA to make us safe at night. Now, what we do know is that Roundup and glyphosate attack or damage the very fundamental foundations of our health. And I think, Ben, you're going to be checking them off with me and with your head shaking, saying, yep, those are foundational aspects of our physiology. First of all, it can deprive us of the ability of accessing and absorbing minerals. And the minerals that are in our system can be bound with the glyphosate molecule and rendered useless. And so without minerals, many metabolic pathways can be shut down because they don't function without the use of certain minerals. One pathway called the shikimate pathway used by gut bacteria uses minerals and others to create the precursors to our serotonin, melatonin, and dopamine, neurotransmitters. So if we have problems with that, it's a fundamental problem for not only our health, but also our depression, potential for depression and anxiety, and our ability to sleep. We also have hormone disruptions at higher levels with Roundup and glyphosate. That could disrupt all sorts of systems. It also is an antibiotic. Roundup or glyphosate is actually patented as an antibiotic, and it preferentially kills beneficial gut bacteria, not the nasty pathogenic stuff. So that can lead to imbalance in our gut bacteria, which is the precursor to most diseases, according to some experts. It also can damage the mitochondria, which is the energy centers of our cell, and its mitochondria is linked to aging and cancer and many other things. And so with the damage to mitochondria, we can see a lot of diseases sprouting from there. And it can also damage the intestinal tract. So it can cause leaky gut, certainly in a laboratory where the cells separate and cause gaps. It can also suppress digestive enzymes and damage the walls of the intestines in other ways. So if you look at these things, it still doesn't get to the last one, which is cancer. It's been determined by the World Health Organization's top committee that it is a probable human carcinogen, and it would be a definite carcinogen if there were enough research on humans. Most of the research is on animals, so they say, okay, so it definitely causes cancer to animals and probably causes cancer to humans. We just don't have enough human data.
Well, my head was shaking. All those are our foundational things, and our listeners know we talk about the mitochondria all the time. We talk about minerals all the time, these metabolic pathways that rely on minerals, and how the glyphosate will just bind that, chelate that, those minerals out. Of course, the gut bacteria is foundational. We've talked about that ad nauseum. So devastating effects when you consume this non-natural product, glyphosate, which we happen to be in Roundup Ready Cotton Central. So I don't know this for a fact, but I think there's a cloud of Roundup that tends to just hover around West Texas, unfortunately.
What you'll get in areas where Roundup is sprayed a lot is Roundup ends up in the rainwater. It ends up in the drinking water, ends up in the air. In Mississippi, they found 75% of the air and rain samples had glyphosate. The Roundup also can persist in the soil, and it's been found to last as long as 22 years before it breaks down to just 50% of the quantity. That's a half-life, and that's the longest recorded half-life. It's not usually in the soil that long. It can be there for a year or more, but it can be there for 10 years. And Monsanto got convicted of false advertising, both in the U.S. and then later in Europe, for pretending that it was biodegradable. Now, one of the ways that the World Health Organization determined that glyphosate and Roundup were probable human carcinogens is that where it is sprayed a lot, there are higher incidents of cancer. And so we would expect that in areas of Roundup Ready Cotton, there would be higher cancer rates, and also birth defects. Roundup is linked to birth defects, and where it is sprayed by plane in Argentina, and it ends up drenching whole communities, the birth defect rate has skyrocketed, as has the cancer rate. There's also other respiratory and other conditions that have gone up in the exposed population, as well as miscarriages. That's another issue. In the film Secret Ingredients, it's fascinating that we have a clinic where it's a chiropractic clinic, and the chiropractor puts all of her infertile couples on a protocol. In addition to chiropractic, they all are switched to an organic diet. And as of the film, 92 couples that went on the protocol that were infertile, many of them had been to fertility clinics and had not been successful, they all had babies. They all have healthy kids now. And of the people that went through her protocol but did not have babies, zero. She had 100% success rate. And it's amazing if you think of the number of fertility clinics now and the amount of problems that people are having with fertility and miscarriages, and to think it may be the Roundup in our food supply or the GMOs in our food supply. And when I suggest going organic, then I'm saying don't just go non-GMO. That's because Roundup is not just sprayed directly on the soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa. It's also sprayed on many non-GMO crops, essentially all the grains, wheat, oats, rye, barley. Oats have the highest residue levels of Roundup. It's sprayed on these to dry it down, to force rapid ripening, to kill the weeds just before the harvest. It's also sprayed on the pulses, lentils, and mung beans, and peas. It's sprayed on potato fields, sweet potato fields, citrus orchards, vineyards. It's found in wine. It's found in orange juice. I'm talking about glyphosate and its residues. So it's actually pervasive in our food supply. And so we recommend going organic because that is a system that disallows both GMO crops and Roundup and other toxic synthetic chemicals.
Okay. Could you speak to, I'll have some folks tell me, well, the organic label's not necessarily all that it's cracked up to be. You know, there's some contamination, cross-contamination, or deception and purposeful contamination somewhere along the way, or there's a certain percentage of pesticide that can be on some of these. They're just not confident in that labeling. How do you answer that?
Well, I think that it is appropriate to be alerted that it's not going to be 100%. You can have products that are non-GMO project verified, which means they're actually tested for GMO contamination. Organics don't even require the testing, and contamination can occur without even knowing it. With a non-GMO project, you get tested, so the gold star would be products that are both organic and non-GMO project verified. But even then, you know, the non-GMO project has an action threshold of 0.9% contamination, meaning it can have low levels of GMO contamination and still easily pass the certification, because the nature of nature is to be generous, to contaminate. In this case, you have a corn field that's genetically engineered upwind, and it pollinates at the time that a non-GMO corn field is downwind and tasseling, and it'll just cross-pollinate. And there you have it. It's just jumped the fences, so to speak. So you're going to end up with contamination. Similarly with the spraying, glyphosate can end up coming down in the rain, and you can't protect against that when you have a crop. You can't cover it and put it in a greenhouse. In most cases, you can't. So you're going to end up with contamination. And, of course, there's always some fraud in the systems that we have here. But it's the best we have. So I'm not saying it's a guarantee. I'm saying that if you want to minimize, not 100% eliminate, but minimize your exposure to GMOs and Roundup and other synthetic toxic chemicals, it's a good choice. It's a great choice. In fact, it's the choice that more than a dozen people in our film, Secret Ingredients, took and were able to overcome a long list of diseases. And even the kids in two families, the boys that were autistic, no longer autistic after the family switched to organic. And, of course, that doesn't happen to every autistic family and every autistic boy, but we have a pediatrician saying that sometimes diet alone can have that dramatic effect on autistic children. And she's seen it, and she's actually prescribed it, and she's seen that when the family switches to organic for the sake of the autistic boy, the sister loses her ADD diagnosis, the father's kidneys get better, the mom loses weight, and there's like a holistic change. We also know from plenty of tests that when someone switches to organic, even though there might be contamination, the amount of toxic chemicals in the blood goes down dramatically in just 2 weeks. And so that's why the pediatrician said to me, she recommends to all the families that want to have kids to go to organic at least 2 weeks before they conceive, and ideally a lot longer. And there's many reasons why an organic set of parents will give rise to a healthier child, from the microbiome to the amount of hormones, etc. In the first pregnancy, the mother tends to dump a bunch of toxins out into the womb, and that's better to have dumped it prior to having a baby.
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%, and we give similar counsel to our young ladies and men who are of the conception age. We're right before the break, Jeffrey, and the next question is probably going to be a lengthy answer, so I think we'll probably go ahead and take the break. But I want to prep you. The question I'm going to ask is how can the WHO, World Health Organization, come out and say glyphosate is a probable cause of cancer? And then I've, from your website, a statement of policy by the FDA put out way back May 29th of 1992, and the quote says from the FDA, "The agency is not aware of any information showing that foods derived by these new methods," meaning GMO, "differ from other foods in any meaningful or uniform way." So that's
beautiful.
Our
question, Ben. You're going to love the answer. It's really diabolical.
All right. Well, y'all stick with us. We will be right back. We are talking with Jeffrey Smith, Executive Director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. You can find out all about Jeffrey, the books, the movies, tons of information. There's even PowerPoint slides you can get off there and do a presentation yourself. But at responsibletechnology.org is the website. So we will be right back. This is Ben Edwards with You're the Cure. Okay, we are back. Thank you for joining us back again for the second half of the hour. We have Jeffrey Smith with us from the Institute of Responsible Technology. ResponsibleTechnology.org is the website. I'd encourage everybody to get on there. Also check out his book, check out the movies. Full of good information. Our clinic is mostly an education resource. We believe our members, our patients, can get well. Their body's designed to fix itself and to function normally, just like your automobile should, if you just maintain it properly. If you just give it the raw material the guy that built that car intended for that car to have, then it'll run. You shouldn't be in the shop very often, and that car's life expectancy should be really long. And it's the same with our body. Give it what it needs, avoid what it doesn't, and you'll stay out of the doctor's office. Obviously, food is a big, big, big part of that. So there's certain ingredients that will cause damage, certain ingredients that will cause health. So eat for health. What you're eating will either heal you or kill you, we often say. But we're all about education, and so is Jeffrey Smith and the Institute for Responsible Technology. So we're, again, very blessed and glad that he was able to join us today. Now, the question I asked Jeffrey before the break was, how can the World Health Organization come out with the statement that glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup, which is the herbicide that is sprayed on the Roundup Ready crops that we've been talking about, how could they say that it's a probable carcinogen, causes cancer? And then the FDA statement, May of 1992, said, "This agency is not aware of any information showing that foods derived by these new methods," meaning GMO, "differ from other foods in any meaningful or uniform way." So that's our FDA position, and WHO has a different position. And well, I guess I could say that was way back in 1992. So maybe the FDA has become aware of some new information. And have they changed that policy statement since 92, Jeffrey?
No, they haven't. And in fact, the policy statement was based on fraud. I think if any listener is believing at this point that the FDA acts impartially for the interests of all Americans and is really the champion of public good in all cases, if you want to maintain that vision, you may want to stop listening right now, because I'm about to burst a bubble if that's what your opinion has been. The FDA turns out to be a very political organization, and this is a perfect example of how that happened. I mentioned earlier that Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, was placed in charge of policy at the FDA at the time that the FDA was creating their policy on GMOs and also on genetically engineered bovine growth hormone injected into cows to increase milk supply, also a product of Monsanto. And both got approved under Michael Taylor's leadership. Now, that sentence that you gave, that the agency wasn't aware of information showing that GMOs were significantly different, was a lie. We didn't know it in 1992. That's when it was released at the end of May. And it was released because the White House had instructed the FDA to promote GMOs. And a couple of days earlier, Dan Quayle, the vice president, had announced that they were not subjecting GMOs to unnecessary regulation. Dan Quayle was in charge of the Council of Competitiveness, which was a high-level council designed to increase U.S. exports, and they had been convinced that GMOs would increase U.S. exports and the domination of the food industry around the world. Both that did not happen and actually had the opposite effect. Well, in 1998, Steve Drucker, who later wrote a book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, he sued the FDA, and they were forced to turn over 44,000 secret internal documents. And when going over those documents, he and others realized that there was fraud, that in fact, the sentence that was the basis of the policy was that no GMO testing was necessary, no GMO labeling was necessary. In fact, the company could put a GMO on the market without even telling the FDA. That policy was based on that sentence that you read, and the sentence was not true. The overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the FDA was that that sentence was not true. They instead said that the process of genetic engineering and traditional breeding are different and lead to different risks, and that by trying to force the conclusion that they're the same is like trying to force a square peg into a round hole. That's nearly a quote. Furthermore, they described that the process of genetic engineering could create allergens and toxins and anti-nutrients and new diseases, and that they urged their superiors to require long-term testing, including human toxicological tests, and none of that was implemented. Instead, it was a lie claiming that they weren't aware of any differences that posed any risks. So it wasn't a scientific opinion. It was basically political science. In fact, when the first draft of the policy went up to the Office of Management and Budget and also the White House and also the Health and Human Services, it still wasn't pro-GMO enough. They wanted to reduce the number of pages dedicated to the environmental damage. They said it should be clear that GMOs are safer and more predictable. Completely the opposite of what the scientists said, but that became national policy, and on that basis, the rest of the world was subject to intense bullying by the United States. And as I traveled, I've been to 45 countries, and I've spoken to many government officials, and they say, well, we don't have to test for GMOs because the FDA has looked at it and approved their safety. Well, it turns out the FDA does not approve GMOs. They allow companies to determine on their own if the GMOs are safe. If the company submits their product to a voluntary consultation process with the FDA, it's basically a meaningless exercise. They never have enough information to determine whether the crop or the food are safe. They're never given that information. If they ask questions, they're typically ignored. And at the end of this meaningless exercise, they receive a letter. The FDA submits a letter to the company acknowledging that the company believes their GMOs are safe, and it's the company's responsibility to make that determination. So that's the fate of the GMO science, fallen on the rocks of ignorance and politics. With the EPA, it's much the same. The Environmental Protection Agency was in charge of the Roundup side of it, and it turns out that they have also been captured by the companies they're supposed to regulate. So if you're going to test for a Roundup herbicide, you typically not ask the company that makes it to do the tests, but the EPA as well as the FDA don't do their own tests. They allow the companies to do their own research and submit the data. Even companies that have been caught lying and submitting false evidence in the past, they just give them a wave and pretend that they're giving them the right information. In addition, instead of testing the full Roundup formulation, they just ask for testing the glyphosate, and they don't test the low levels of exposure, which can cause endocrine disruption. They pretend that there's not been 15 years in research in endocrine disruption and low levels of damage, and so basically they do whatever they can to ignore asking for real research. But even if the research shows problems, they turn a blind eye. And this was made public when another lawsuit forced the FDA, and in this case the EPA, to turn over its internal documents and memos and even texts. And it turns out there was someone called Jess Rowland working at the EPA on Monsanto's behalf. He was the lapdog, but one of many people in the EPA that these internal documents exposed as collaborating and colluding with Monsanto. And there's a letter from Marion Copley, who's a senior toxicologist at the EPA for 30 years. She had to leave the agency because she had cancer, but she wrote a stormy letter to Jess Rowland saying, these are the 14 characteristics of glyphosate, any one of which can lead to cancer, and glyphosate has all 14. It is definitely a carcinogen and should be labeled a probable human carcinogen. And then she blasted Jess Rowland. She said, you have rewritten findings to benefit the companies that submit their products. You have bullied members of your committee. He was in charge of the committee that determined whether things caused cancer. And she said that, finally, do something in your life that will, instead of doing for your bonus, that will be good for the public good. And then she named another person at the EPA saying, if anyone in the EPA is taking bribes, it's her, your colleague, who makes no sense. So she was saying all this to Jess Rowland, and they gave her reason in the last sentence. She said, I have cancer, and I wanted to do what was right while I still have time. Well, she passed away, but Jess Rowland did not heed her strong, urgent request. Instead, he was working with Monsanto when there was another agency in the United States government that wanted to do a test or evaluation of the carcinogenicity of glyphosate. Jess Rowland tried to stop that other agency and mentioned to his Monsanto handler, if I can stop it, I deserve a medal. Well, it was stopped. Jess Rowland was in charge of the committee that determined that glyphosate did not cause cancer. Later, Dr. Chuck Benbrook released a peer-reviewed paper showing how they drew their conclusions by cherry-picking the science. 90% of the papers they looked at were industry research that was never published. In other words, Monsanto's own research. And the World Health Organization, their main source of information was published peer-reviewed articles, and many of them included the full formulation, not just glyphosate. So the EPA cherry-picked data that was made for them by Monsanto. Now, can we trust Monsanto? Well, actually, we also have data showing that we can't. In the memos and the emails that were found, they discovered that Monsanto had hired a Dr. Parry to try to counteract research that showed that glyphosate caused oxidative stress and genotoxicity, which lead to cancer. So they were very concerned about the fact that there was mounting evidence in journals that glyphosate caused the changes in the cell that lead to cancer. So they hired arguably the number one person in the field to work on their behalf to counter that argument. He actually agreed with it. He looked at all the research and says, oh yeah, it's certainly a carcinogen, and we would need to do more tests to verify this, and he recommended those tests. And I remember reading a memo from one Monsanto executive to the other asking incredulously, has Dr. Parry ever done research for industry before? In other words, doesn't he know that he's not supposed to come to those conclusions? And they said, well, we could try and invest a lot of money to change him, but I think we should do something different. And they determined that they would hire someone else they'd hire someone else to put their name on a ghost-written study. So Monsanto decided to bury the report from Dr. Parry, not share it with the EPA, which is their legal responsibility, and instead they ghost wrote an article which came to the exact opposite conclusions, paid some scientists to put their name on it, and that became the basis for the decisions by the EPA and the European Food Safety Authority, a ghost-written article that lied about the science.
kind of speechless. That's awful. Let's talk a little more on, is there some science, if someone was going to be pro-Monsanto, pro-GMO, the manipulated or cherry-picked science, what I'm thinking about is maybe some of these feeding studies, because sometimes I'll hear this from folks who are trying to talk me out of being anti-GMO. Well, this feeding study was done and it didn't show any difference. Well, it was like a 5-day study or something. They cut it off short, as opposed to, well, if they would have fed them for 30 days or 90 days. So when you extend the studies, but just give some examples of how the data can be manipulated, cherry picked, or even altered, I guess, besides obviously a ghost written article.
I love this question because I actually spent a lot of time in my second book, Genetic Roulette, writing a 41-page section exposing, catching them red-handed, not just Monsanto, but the basic biotech industry, on manipulating data. And they use the wrong detection methods, the wrong controls, the wrong statistics. And when they find problems that where there's statistical significance against the control group, they'll try and find other control groups in some historic study that had nothing to do with the current one and say, there were changes in that control group that would make this non-statistically significant. I mean, in the film Secret Ingredients, I point out that they compare rats and mice that are fed GMOs and Roundup to a control group that are also fed GMOs and Roundup. And that's because they feed them standard rat chow or mice chow. And when you analyze the lab food, it is filled with GMOs and Roundup and heavy metals and other toxins. And so they're not actually comparing to a control, they're comparing to another experimental group. And so, for example, when Seralini came up with his research showing that Roundup and GMOs caused multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage, one of the complaints that was manufactured by the eco chamber of front groups by Monsanto was that they used the wrong rats. They used Sprague-Dawley rats, and Monsanto had used the same rats in its research, and they didn't mention that. But they said these rats are prone to cancer. So when you fed Roundup-ready corn or Roundup to the rats, you had 80 or 90% of them had developed cancer. Well, if you look at the history of Sprague-Dawley rats, then 80% of them can get cancer over their lifetime anyway under laboratory conditions. Well, they didn't mention that those laboratory conditions are eating the laboratory food that contains GMOs and Roundup. So, yes, under GMOs and Roundup, 80 to 90% get cancer or tumors. But Seralini's control group, they ate completely clean food, food that had been tested and verified not to contain any of those problems. And so it was interesting how they just tried to spin attacking his study, saying it couldn't possibly be true because the control group didn't get enough cancer. Well, it didn't get enough cancer because it was eating clean food. Now, there's some really amazing ways of manipulating with bovine growth hormone. I talked to a former Monsanto scientist. He said that three of his colleagues were testing the milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone and found so much cancer-promoting hormone in the milk that the three Monsanto scientists refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. Well, there was research that was done to prove that there was not sufficient growth hormone in the milk from treated cows. And what they did is they injected the cows with just 2% of the amount of bovine growth hormone that would normally be injected. It wasn't even Monsanto's variety. It was a different company's variety. And they ended up with some increase in bovine growth hormone in the milk. So then they pasteurized the milk normally, and it wasn't doing anything. So they pasteurized the milk 120 times longer than normal. And under that inflated condition, they were able to destroy 19% of the hormone. So then they added powdered hormone to the milk. I think it was about 143 times the amount of normal bovine growth hormone was added to the milk in powdered form. Then they pasteurized it 120 times longer, and under those artificial conditions, they destroyed 90% of the hormone. Now, what did the FDA scientists report? That pasteurization destroys 90% of the hormone. They ignored the fact that it was a completely artificial study where it had nothing to do with real-world processes and procedures. There was, in fact, that same former Monsanto scientist also revealed to me that when they fed corn to rats, the rats had serious health problems, so they redesigned or rewrote the study to hide the effects. This had no, I was totally not surprised by this because I had already analyzed with the help of many scientists how they rigged their research. But this former Monsanto scientist said something else which was quite worrying. I know that Monsanto's corn studies feed a maximum of 33% of GMO corn to the rats. And even then, in 90 days, the rats develop problems. Well, the scientist said, with such low levels of corn being fed for so short a time causing such significant damage, he was aware that the population in southern Africa use corn as a staple and eat it three times a day. So their caloric intake of corn is far greater than, and they eat it for their whole lives. So he was concerned about the population of humans that would be exposed in unprecedented levels to a GMO. Well, years later, I was talking to a veterinarian who had worked with a farmer in South Africa who was having trouble with cows' health and the milk, the small milk production, and also pig health, and he was losing money. And the guy told him not to use GMOs because throughout the U.S., when people switch to non-GMO feed, their animals get better. And sure enough, the animals got better. He ran out of the non-GMO corn he had grown and then bought GMO corn from the marketplace. The animals got worse again. In the meantime, he grew enough non-GMO corn to feed year-round, and the animals got better again. But he had farm workers who were eating the corn that he was growing on his field three times a day. And when it was GMO, there was dramatic sickness among his farm workers. He needed 50, he had to hire 60 because 20% were always so sick they couldn't work. They had severe headaches, inflammation, flu-like symptoms. And I heard from the veterinarian that when the person met with his members of his farm workers, that once or twice a month he would notice someone that their eyes were not tracking together, they were tracking independently, and he knew that within 1 or 2 days they'd be dead. And he didn't have no idea why. But when he switched to non-GMO corn for the animals, the workers ate the non-GMO corn, and they got better. And when he ran out of non-GMO corn and had to buy corn from the marketplace, the workers and the animals got worse until he was in non-GMO permanently. Only then did he put the two together, which was completely a shock. So these people in Africa are like the canaries in the coal mine because they're eating more GMOs than we eat in the United States. Now, I think of terms of the Hispanic community, they eat a lot of corn tortillas, and so their exposure is pretty high. And so I loathe to think what may be happening to their health and which diseases might go down if they were switching to non-GMO and organic as opposed to the GMOs that are sprayed with herbicides.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question, and I guess your answer could be none of the above, but if you had a conventionally produced corn tortilla versus a wheat flour tortilla, so both are genetically modified, sprayed, and you had to pick one, which would you eat?
Good question. So first of all, wheat is not technically genetically engineered.
Right.
It's been crossbred, selectively bred, at times exposed to radiation to mutate the seeds. So it's gone through a lot of changes.
Hybridization.
The amount of gluten. They've done a number of things with it. And unfortunately, it is also sprayed often with Roundup just before harvest. Corn not only has the genetically engineered alterations in the genome, and it could be sprayed with Roundup, but corn also is engineered to produce a toxin called BT toxin. And BT toxin is an insecticide, and it breaks open the walls of the gut of the insects to kill them. Well, it turns out it was supposed to not have any impact on humans or mammals, but under laboratory conditions, it also poked holes in human cells. And it was found in the blood of 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada and in 80% of their unborn fetuses. Now, It's a hole-poking toxin. It breaks holes in the membranes of cells. And what is it doing in our fetuses? It gets into the blood. It gets into the brain of the fetus because there's no blood-brain barrier. It might be poking holes in the brain cells, in the brain of the offspring of this generation. BT toxin is damaging. It's toxic to red blood cells. It might relate to leukemia. And how did it get into the blood in the first place? It might have created holes in the walls of the intestines, as it does with the insects, that allow the BT toxin and other toxins to come into the bloodstream. So you have some corn in the United States that has several types of BT toxin, plus being sprayed by Roundup. So it's a cocktail of both the insecticide, the herbicide, and the collateral damage that results from the process of genetic engineering. What's that collateral damage? Well, in one corn plant, a gene was switched on during the process of genetic engineering that's normally not on. It produces an allergen called gamazine, so it might create an allergic reaction. In another corn, there was so much damage and change as a result of the process of genetic engineering. Over 200 proteins and metabolites were different in the GM corn, including higher levels of putrescine and cadaverine. These are elements that give rise to the foul odor of rotting dead bodies. They're linked to bad breath. They can also promote histamine reactions and therefore increased allergens. They're also implicated as a cancer-causing agent when mixed with other foods. So you have this whole soup of changes that result from the process of genetic engineering, plus the BT toxin, plus, which is also known to cause allergic reactions in humans, plus the Roundup Ready, which damages the fundamental foundations of our health, all inside a corn tortilla. Do I want to eat the corn tortilla? No. Do I want to eat the non-organic wheat tortilla that's sprayed with Roundup? No. So my preference is to eat 100% organic in both cases.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you were able to go through the BT toxin and the growth hormone, bovine growth hormone, because this isn't just about glyphosate, and it's not just about a single gene being altered to be Roundup Ready. I mean, it's across the board, multiple different genes being altered, multiple different avenues for the GMO genetic engineering technology to enter our food supply, and I'm sure it's growing. We don't have time to probably get into this RNA stuff that's coming out. But it's clear when you alter food the way we're altering it, especially with the intent to spray it with some other harmful chemicals, and then we're relying on a political organization, which we know political organizations are influenced by political donations. But you get this weird mixture of money and politics and business interest and et cetera. I mean, we can go through for two more hours, probably. But bottom line, keep it simple. Just eat food how it was originally intended to be consumed, clean and non-altered. But if you do want to dive into the science more, there's a whole lot more you can dive into. ResponsibleTechnology.org has a ton of resources on there. I mean, just the PowerPoint slides are amazing when you go through and see the data, but see the pictures also. But
you know, Ben, the probably the quickest conversion is by watching the film Secret Ingredients. And you can watch that at secretingredientsmovie.com or link over to the iTunes or Amazon or Google Play links from there. We have found that virtually everyone who watches it gets a much bigger dose than we've been able to handle in this phone call, because you get to see the animations of what happens in the body. You get to hear the physicians saying that the recoveries that you're seeing before these people, before your very eyes, are typical of the reactions of their patients, of the thousands of patients that they put on. So it's actually quite a convincing argument. But what's more convincing is the fact that when people actually switch to organic, and my suggestion is to do a little diary of your symptoms, your energy level, your mood, behavior, and what percentage of your diet is organic, when people see the changes in their own lives, that's when it's most relevant. Yeah. So I would suggest a twofold approach. Watch the film and then immediately make changes and see what happens.
Awesome. Well, that's a great piece of advice, and I'd concur with that. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm going to go watch it tonight, Secret Ingredients. We already eat organically. And there's so much more. I mean, there's Genetic Roulette, the original movie. Also, there's a book, Genetic Roulette. Seeds of Deception is the other book. So get educated, get informed, know, excuse me, know the why behind the changes that we ask you to make, at least as members of Veritas. And I encourage everybody to get involved. And change is happening. I think we just need to mention the, probably a lot of people heard about the landmark case against Monsanto, the groundskeeper out, I believe, in California. They found in favor of the groundskeeper who has cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I believe, found that Monsanto was responsible via the glyphosate, the Roundup. I know that the general public is demanding more and more as far as food labeling and organic products. We see more and more of the big companies, food producing companies, going this way. So you're making an impact, Jeffrey, obviously, huge impact. Keep it up. Appreciate all your hard work. Sure appreciate you being with us for this hour. And we have about a minute left or two if we need to stretch it. But just some closing comments or final thought that you have.
Sure. I want to say that actually the individual decisions to go non-GMO has resulted in global change. In Europe, the scientist who was charged with figuring out how to test for the safety of GMOs discovered that the process was inherently dangerous and caused damage to rats, and he was fired from his job and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. But when his gag order was lifted by an order of parliament, hundreds of articles alerted the people there. They were concerned about eating GMOs, so the food companies stopped using GMOs as direct ingredients in Europe back in 1999 because of an informed consumer base. But those same companies continued to sell it to unsuspecting Americans because we weren't informed. Now 46% of Americans say they're seeking non-GMO food because they are aware of the potential health risks, and that's causing the same food companies to now switch more and more brands. And so by switching to non-GMO, and of course organic is our preference, we are making big changes in the marketplace, which will affect everyone now and also future generations.
Awesome. Super. Well, thank you once again, Jeffrey Smith, the Institute for Responsible Technology. You can find more at responsibletechnology.org. And as always, we will have a replay of this interview archived on our website, veritasmedical.com. Just click on the radio show button, also on iTunes. So send this out to all your friends and get folks informed, and we can continue to let the body cure itself, because you are the cure. Thanks again for joining us today, and we look forward to another conversation in the future. Jeffrey, you're always welcome back here. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Ben. Safe eating.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. This has been Edwards with You're the Cure.